If I have no bed and no home to call my own, then find me on corners, in shelters, at anonymous meetings, last in all the lines. And yet, if I know you and listen when you tell my heart your secrets and trust you for my daily bread and life, call you my essential and first friend, then, Lord, last or first, I won't mind where you put me as long as I am still with you. Ann Osdiek. If you were here last Sunday, you were probably wondering if you're having a bit of a Back to the Future or Groundhog Day experience, deja vu all over again. Just last Sunday, Jesus was healing on the Sabbath. It was a woman with a bad back. And then discussing with religious leaders and lawyers what the Sabbath is all about. He threw in a story about watering your donkey just to bring it home. This week, he's healing a man on the Sabbath, a man this time, attempting to discuss the Sabbath vision, and then bringing it home with a story about an ox. Reading these stories back to back makes it feel as if it all transpired from one Sabbath to the next, or possibly all in one day. But of course, we have no idea. Nor do we know if it was the same group of Pharisees. Kind of fun to imagine that it could have been. We see them eyeing one another as he heals on the Sabbath again, rolling their eyes as he pulls in a similar object lesson. This time it's an ox in a ditch instead of a thirsty donkey. Or he adds, perhaps a child. If your child fell in the ditch, you would pull her out, wouldn't you? Even on the Sabbath? But they don't answer. It's just crickets. It is as if they have decided not to debate this point with him any further. Maybe last week's group of Pharisees warned this week's group not to try to win this particular battle. Or last week's group had grown a little wiser and kept their lips zipped when Jesus once again reminded them of the essence of Sabbath life, which is worship. He speaks as if he's addressing the same group of people. You've had time to think about this. You've seen the once bent over woman restored to life. So what do you say? Does the law allow healing on the Sabbath or not? But no answer. Except my phone. Wow. Which says it's time to wake up.
Wow.
Wow, I guess so. Like, I've never slept till 11:30 in my life. All right. Where were we? Wow. That was weird. Yeah. So anyway, don't you wonder what they were thinking? Who among them was still convinced that Jesus' actions were a disregard for the Sabbath? Who was wavering? Who was beginning to lean into Jesus' way of thinking? Who was able to be honest enough to realize that it wasn't the Sabbath healing that was making them uncomfortable? It was the person behind the healing. It was the person who was claiming to be able to forgive sins. That's what they were uncomfortable about. The person in whom the Spirit was fully present to perform miracles. Who among them kept their mouths shut, but knew they had witnessed the full realization of Sabbath worship, an immersion in God's mercy, grace, and rescue, an immersion in God's healing and wholeness? No. They wouldn't want to talk to him about Sabbath, so they just watched and said nothing. But those who had reconvened at their friend's home for dinner were probably a bit on edge, just knowing that Jesus was going to be one of the guests at the table. Now, they might not have minded if Jesus had been sidetracked by a miracle emergency and never made it, but he did. He showed up for dinner. So today's story carries us from the synagogue to the home. And this is a beautiful turn that offers us different insights from last week. It is an appropriate turn because the Pharisees were attuned to celebrating the sacred beyond the temple walls. On this Sabbath, Jesus will turn their eyes to the table around which they gather. He will sit with them around their ordinary table and ask them to look at it with eschatological eyes. He will invite them to consider how God's hospitality translates into this world. Now, let's be careful to remember that all the Pharisees did not hate Jesus, nor did Jesus condemn all Pharisees. The religious leaders, Pharisees and Sadducees, are often lumped together and labeled bad guys. But think for a minute. Think about Nicodemus and Gamaliel and Joseph of Arimathea, all Pharisees. Nicodemus, the man who had come to Jesus at night to explore questions of faith and who assisted Joseph in the preparation and burial of Jesus' body. Gamaliel appears in the fifth chapter of the book of Acts, defending John and Peter for proclaiming their truth about Jesus. So let's be careful when we talk about Pharisees. They weren't all out to get Jesus. Jesus saw their desire to walk closely with God. Jesus saw some flaws in their plan. But Jesus irritated and disputed the thinking of all kinds of people, not just religious leaders. He disrupted tax collectors, fishermen, lawyers, Jews and Gentiles, even his own family. Jesus was dazzling and annoying all at the same time. He was delightful and irresistible and infuriating. Would you have invited him to dinner? If you knew his reputation, you'd have to be brave to do so. And apparently, this Pharisee was just that. He has invited Jesus, along with other guests, to his home for the Sabbath meal. Now, this host may have had hopes of scintillating conversation on a variety of theological topics, such as free will or resurrection or the critical role of the synagogue, things he would have wanted to talk to Jesus about. Well, maybe that host should have prepared some discussion questions before Jesus arrived, or maybe he should have handed Jesus a little scroll with a list of topics and whispered, "Could you please stay off of these?" The dinner gathering would be memorable, but this Pharisee might not ask Jesus back again anytime soon, because Jesus is going to find a way to possibly offend everyone, host and guests. Now, maybe Jesus made some small talk. Maybe he commented on someone's new tunic or the wonderful aroma of the meal. But what we see is Jesus standing back and observing. As the lawyers and Pharisees had watched him closely as he healed an ailing man, he now watches the guests. In this hierarchical world, the seat you were given was intended to convey your place in society. We still experience this today when we gather in boardrooms. We have experienced it at family meals when the younger members are relegated to the kids' table. And I imagine we have all been tempted to rearrange a place card or two or three so that we could sit with our friends at a wedding dinner. Those honored guests are about to celebrate not just any meal, but the Sabbath meal. The Sabbath meal. Yet they are jostling for position, trying to maneuver for just the right spot. It reminds me of musical chairs. You know how it gets harder and harder as the chairs disappear, and you walk more slowly past the fronts of the chairs and then speed up around the back so that when the music stops, you can be sure to claim one. These adults are determined to win this status game, but Jesus will call them on it. He will caution them with a parable, and it's a parable based upon a teaching from Proverbs which they would have all known. We know it today as Proverbs 25, verses 6 and 7. "Don't exalt yourself in the presence of the king, or stand in the palace of important people, because it is better that the king say to you, 'Come up here,' than to be demoted before a ruler." There is a detail in Jesus' story that we need to notice. The setting of the story he tells is a wedding banquet. And when we hear that phrase, wedding banquet, there's something we need to connect it with. We need to connect that to the heavenly feast. Jesus is talking about everyday behavior, but he is placing before them the image of heaven. And God's realm, an everyday Sabbath realm. That's God's realm, everyday Sabbath. And there, status holds no meaning. Prestige holds no meaning. To know the right people means knowing the homeless person's name, the name of the one in prison, the lonely one, the immigrant, the shamed one, the broken one. They will all have seats at the table, good seats at God's table. How did the guests respond? Did his words stop them in their tracks? Did they pretend that they hadn't really been trying to secure the best seat for themselves? Did they subtly move towards the lower seats? Were they shamed? Or did they stand firm in their determination? Or later, as they lay on their beds in the dark, might some of them have wept with relief that Jesus had just set them free from having to keep up with appearances? Would they allow themselves to feel the deep acceptance of God rather than having to strive for the recognition of people? Who knows? But Jesus turns from the guests, who are trying, oh so nonchalantly, to appear as if they don't care where they sit. And then he addresses the host, and he says, could we talk about your guest list? Jesus' longing is for this man to stop playing it safe. He wants this Pharisee to experience a deeper Sabbath celebration. If I had been that host, I think I would have asked if I could choose between the two pieces of instruction. Going to the end of the line is pretty easy compared to inviting guests who make you uncomfortable. Luke's Jesus wants the Pharisee to live out his faith by welcoming those who struggled to survive in that society. He wants the Pharisee to build relationships with those whose only hope is God, whose sole dependence is on God. He wants the Pharisee to hear their stories, to know their reality. Maybe then he could be assured beyond a shadow of a doubt that their poverty, their struggles, were not expressions of punishments from God. When we recognize that suffering is not sent by God, is not of God or God's doing, we can then take responsibility and get to work to bring about the change God longs for this world. Did Jesus really expect this Pharisee to open his table to the poor and the crippled and the lame and the blind? Yeah, probably he did. The poor in money and the poor in spirit. Those crippled, lame, and blind in body and soul. Some of them were already there. But could they say that? At the very least, Jesus wanted him to know, wants us to know, that these are the people at God's overflowing table. And for that, we must be grateful. We must be grateful because we are those people. When we are blind to our own faults, prejudices, hungers, God invites us to the table and offers us a place that we do not deserve and that we could never earn. When we are crippled by fear or by shame, God invites us to the table that we might be set free and hold our heads up again. When we are limping along, lame from falling down too many times or from being tripped up by this very world, God invites us to the table and offers us a soft place to rest. When we are stricken by poverty of spirit, a hunger so deep that it is a gnawing pain, God invites us to the table and offers us the bread of heaven and the wine of salvation. Blind and crippled, lame and poor, God invites us to the table. It is grace alone that brings us here. So let no one be denied. And let us give thanks to the God who spreads a feast before us and for a heavenly realm where every day is a Sabbath day. Thanks be to God. Amen.